Before we get started, I'm going to ask those of you in the audience, if you have a cell phone, if you would mind putting it on vibrate or just shut it off because of the recording that takes place. We do record all of our board proceedings. The audio portion is recorded, so you can always go back and listen to it at a later date. Hopefully in the near future, we'll probably be able to do the video streaming of it as well. That is something being looked at. Okay. Ready, Paul?
Yep.
Okay. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 24th, 2012. I would ask the members of the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. Great. Thank you. Okay, and welcome to all of you that are here this morning. The next item on our agenda is for public comments for items that is on today's agenda. If there is anyone that would want to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. I do notice that we have several folks that want to speak on the second public comment portion, which will be a little bit later on in the agenda. But is there anyone that want to talk about an item on today's agenda? Okay. Seeing no one. The consideration of minutes of 7:17:12.
Move approval of the minutes.
And I will second it. Any discussion? No. Since I was gone, I did read through it, and so it looked real good, and just wanted to acknowledge that. So all those in favor of the approval of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Good. Item 5, consideration of personnel actions. There were a couple actions here. Consideration.
Move approval.
I will second it. It's been moved and seconded, the approval of the personnel action. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel actions are approved. On item number 6 on the consent agenda, we need to add utility permits, number 1306 and number 1307, and road closure, number 1305. Just for public notice, a lot of times utility permits and things like this could happen at the last minute. There's a notification or reason to either close the road or to process something, and this usually occurs after the minutes and the agenda has been posted. So we always take the option of approving those when they are received. So that should be added to the consent agenda. So with that, I think everything else is good to go.
I'd move approval of the consent agenda with the noted changes.
And I will second that. It's been moved and seconded, the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Okay. Then as we move on, there was item number 7. Paul, do you have any knowledge about this one? It was tabled. Was there anything?
It was on the consent agenda last week, and it was an application for a permit to display fireworks at the campground, Twin Acres. And since we're currently under a burn ban, he needed to get a letter from the Colo Fire Chief, and the letter from the chief is included in the documentation, so it would appear that he's good to go.
So we need to have a motion to remove that, then.
I would make a motion that we untable item number 7.
I will second that motion, and thank you for the discussion. Any additional information to add regarding the application for a fireworks display?
No, I would move approval of the fireworks display permit for Lawn Pro.
I will second it. It's been moved and seconded the approval of the fireworks display for Lawn Pro as submitted.
The waiver from, including the waiver from the fire chief.
Okay, great. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. You have all that now, Shelley? Thank you. Okay, all in favor, well, this roll call as well. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Other reports. Presentation from Don Dot Faust, Director, Second Judicial, Department of Correctional Services. Hi. Come right. You can sit in a comfortable chair. The one to your far side is the closest to you. It's probably the mic works best. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
They're both now. Good.
I'm just here to answer a few questions. Paul is on my board of directors this year.
Oh, that could be bad.
Y'all in the audience can't see this. Those of you who have the pamphlet, you can see that Community Corrections in Iowa. Now, this is the we are the State Department of Corrections funds about 80% of our funding, so we're different than private probation, which also I understand presents to you sometimes. So what I'm talking about is the Department of Correctional Services from the Judicial District, Second Judicial District. Iowa organizes community corrections a little differently than most states in the union, and we're actually pretty proud of that. Now in these short budget times, there are actually other states looking at us to see why we're so successful with community corrections in Iowa. The second judicial district, as you can see from the map, we're the biggest geographic judicial district in the state, 22 counties. And those colored areas there, we've split our 22 counties into three catchment areas. It used to be four, but with the shortage of staff, we are combining some managerial duties. And so now Story County, you're with Green and Carroll and Marshall counties in one catchment area. Courtney Toole is your field supervisor here, and Adam Yetmar runs the residential center, which is in Ames, the Kurt Forbes Center. Today we have about 401, actually exactly 401 active clients from Story County, and about 50 of those are high-risk clients that we have in probation and parole. I wanted to tell you a little bit about our board of directors. I actually answer to a board of 30 directors. In Iowa, I do not answer to the John Baldwin, who's the head of the Iowa Department of Corrections. That's sort of a misconception. He's not in my line of authority, although 80% of our funding comes through the State Department of Corrections to our budget. That's not even enough to cover personnel costs, though, so we really depend a lot on local revenue. My boss, instead, is a board of directors. There are 22 of you, like Paul, represent the 22 counties. So every county board of supervisors has a representative. There are also four judicial delegates that are appointed by Chief Judge Wilkie, who sits right now in Webster County, and there are four advisory committee representatives. In our district, we have four advisory committees, and each one of those sends a delegate to our board. So those are the 30 people that hire and fire the director by Iowa law. They approve our treatment contracts and policy, and we meet quarterly with them. We have about a $13 million budget. Only a little over 10 of that comes from the state. So we depend largely on revenue that comes from our four residential centers. The offenders in those centers pay rent, and our offenders who are on probation, parole, field supervision pay supervision fees. So that's a large part of what we do. I did want to mention we're real proud of the fact, and Paul's heard this, so Paul, you can interrupt with questions and comments. We're real proud of the fact that in Iowa, and especially our district, we are paying attention to what they call risk, needs, responsivity, supervision right now. We do a very valid risk assessment. In fact, we do more than one on our offenders. It's getting pretty technical. We do a pretty good job now of spotting who's high risk, who's low risk, and who's in between. And we know enough from the research now to know that we need to vary supervision levels according to risk level. So we have over 100 of the people in Story County are considered very low risk. And they're actually, the research is telling us that we don't want to over-supervise low-risk people because you actually make them worse. By over-supervising, we meddle in all the protective factors that made them low risk in the first place, like we pull them away from employment and their families and that kind of thing when we don't want to. On the other hand, we need to tightly supervise our higher-risk people, and we've had a real shift in the last couple of years since I'm here to try to move resources, not without blanketing so many of our low-risk people. We're trying to shove more officer time up toward our higher-risk offenders and our sex offenders who really need the tight supervision along with treatment that's very evidence-based. We pay a lot of attention to data to try to figure out what's working and what's not. We've actually discontinued programs where we aren't getting good outcome data, and we're working on some that we're not happy with yet. So we're working on some of that. Our main connection here, I think some of you are more familiar with the private probation. Just so you know, our only connection with them really is that when someone is on supervision with them for domestic violence, we get them to do all the treatment programs with us. So that's probably the main crossover there with them. I don't know if you have just general questions, Paul, or what you'd like me, anything else you'd like me to...
I think most of us are pretty familiar with the Kurt Forbes Center names. How many residential centers are there in this?
There are four residential centers. You have, of course, Kurt Forbes in Ames, 51 beds. B.G. Clark is the residential center in Mason City that also has 51 beds. The Fort Dodge Residential Center is our newest one. It has 61 beds. And then we have the Marshalltown, which is our a little bit smaller one. And so about 207 beds total residential. And Kurt Forbes right now, about 40 out of that 51 happen to come from Story County right now. So a lot of the offenders that are in that residential center, that's the transitional center. Some of those folks are there. They're coming out of prison, and we are transitioning them through the residential center on their way to field supervision. Some of them are on probation. Judges may decide that someone needs a little tighter supervision at first, so when they put them on their probation, sometimes they have what we call a split sentence, so they get some residential center time at the beginning. More and more, we're trying to use it almost like a violation center. So if we have someone in the field who isn't so high risk, we think we need to institutionalize them yet, but they're doing some risky behavior that we want to nip in the bud so that we can still, they show some promise. We want to make sure we get them back in the community without problems. We may do a short stint back. So sometimes halfway between, they may end up doing a little more residential time and then back out. So we have a lot of different uses for our residential centers. They're co-ed, male and female, in this district.
What's the age requirement or age level for individuals that would be admitted to one of these residential centers?
We're an adult system, so 18 and over, yeah. Very rarely we get a juvenile transfer, and you know that they're an adult in the eyes of the law, but that's very, very rare in our district. So pretty much they're 18 and over, yeah.
Have you, and the reason that it's more of a personal question, I've served for a number of years on the Juvenile Justice Advisory Commission, and part of that it was a DMC committee, which was looking at the disproportionality of African Americans, particularly in the juvenile justice system. Mm-hmm. And we have made some great strides in the state of Iowa in reducing the number that have been confined on simple misdemeanor type charges and so forth, and looking for alternative type of placements for them. And we've had a lot of communities play a key role in that. Now, there appears to be a correlation between youthful offenders that could later go on into being incarcerated as adults unless there are steps of intervention early on. Have you been able to track at all the disproportion, or I would say the difference between the ethnic makeups in our residential centers? Is it more tilted one particular ethnic group over another?
And I'm going to write that down and get you more specifics. I don't have it with me today. I can tell you that I just was placed on there's a state committee for adults reentry with the corrections that corrections department's involved in, and I know that, as you said, they got a lot of press. They've been really working on that with different initiatives, and I know that's one of our goals for 2012 and 13. I just got that recently, so I know they're still taking a look at those stats. If it's okay, so I don't guess,
sure.
I will send you some more exact stats. I don't want to guess.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
I got it.
Those are the only questions that I have. Now, in previous years, when I first came on the board back in 2002, I served for a few years before we changed, and Don Toms, I think, came on and replaced me. Paul Fitzgerald, our sheriff, was also on that.
He's on our board.
Oh, there now.
Yeah. Well, Paul's actually on our board. One of our new judicial appointees too is the new police chief in Fort Dodge. So we're trying to get more law enforcement balance with Paul on our board, which is you're right. We need that balance, and we're real happy to have them. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, anything else?
Any other questions?
Thank you so much
for coming, and appreciate it. Okay. Okay, next is the presentation of the FY12 Quarterly Financial Report, Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley.
morning.
Good morning.
Wanted to give you a year-end update for where we ended our fiscal year 12. Overall, we spent 94%, a little over 94% of our budget for all departments. The fund balance status is shown on the bottom of that. Typically when we do our report to the state auditors, or our report that's required by the state auditors, we combine the general and the supplemental. And for your information, that came in at 25.5% on a combination of those two, which made me extremely happy. The general fund only was almost 24, so that's good too. The mental health fund came in at 11%. I'll be talking to you in the next couple weeks. We have some meetings, and we have some information that we're going to share about the mental health fund and what the situation is there since the state decided to take away all the funding during the transition year. I've met with Deb and Galen. We're going to meet with you next Tuesday, and then I'm going to do some more presentations about, you know, what our situation is there. Rural Services Fund came in at 16%. The Secondary Roads Fund came in at almost 35%. So we did okay to start the next fiscal year. I will be coming to you soon also for a budget amendment for the next fiscal year, because some of these things, including the next item on your something on your agenda soon, we're going to have to amend back into the budget because they're still sitting in the FY12 ending fund balances. Revenues came in at 100.79, so a little over almost 1% above what we anticipated for revenues, which was also helpful to the fund balances, obviously. So. Any questions?
Okay. Nope. Okay. Just thanks for the update. And so it looks like at the start of the fiscal year right now, we're a little bit better than we probably anticipated in January when we were looking at the budget.
Yeah, we originally budgeted for FY12 to end the general fund at 21%, so we came in about 4% higher than we anticipated.
The last time it was this high?
Not in my tenure.
It's been probably, I was going to say, probably 2000.
Right, I think so, because 2001, I think 21 is the highest that I can
remember. No, and we have lots of different types of situations now than we did then. The mental health fund is going to need some a loan, most likely, and if we're going to maintain what we had planned on for this fiscal year, we're going to have to loan some money to this mental health fund, and the only way to do that is through this general fund. So we worked really hard. You guys worked really hard on trying to maintain a balance that was sustainable so we could do that. So the state auditors arrive a week from today, or yesterday, so they'll be here for 2 weeks starting next Monday. And then they'll come and do their return final later in the year. We haven't totally determined when that's going to be due to general election and space needs and things like that, and time. But FYI, they will be starting their audit next Monday. So
I won't need to necessarily meet with them.
They usually have an entrance.
Usually they meet with.
They do an entrance, I think.
I thought they did. But
yeah. So
I was gone last week. I didn't receive any notification.
We have not set up anything as far as when we're going to do that entrance exam or anything like that. So we're just working on gathering the documents that they need and trying to get the cash finished up so that we can have documents for them to start auditing. Okay.
Great. Thank you. All righty. Okay, and then moving on down to item number three, the CPAT project update and time frame. Planning and Development Director, Leanne Harder.
Good morning.
What I handed out to you will actually come maybe later with the local foods as well, but I'll get to that shortly. Last week I did forward a copy of a memo I wrote to you, or it was with the agenda. regarding the CPAT, which is the Community Planning Assistance Team, which is an outreach program through the American Planning Association. The report that they compiled regarding developing a strategic plan for economic development. Mr. Sanders asked maybe 2 months ago that we keep this on your radar and that staff do an overall review of what things and put some realistic time frames to the items proposed in that report. The memo outlined that in great detail with some recommendations, and there were some items that staff really needed some direction on that I kind of want to put your attention on today and then bring this forward maybe next week or the following week for some direction as to, yes, these are definitely items to go forward and add these to your work program. I think without having the question mark on those three remaining items addressed, we may be putting the cart before the horse. I always say that backwards. Is that okay to do it in that way?
I think so. I know there's a date coming up when one of us is going to be gone again. So.
Okay.
I think the documentation and the information that's submitted today, as I read through it, I didn't really see a lot of any real questions that came up. My question again, though, would be, to what degree do you think we need to have some refreshers sit down to talk a little bit about what does this actually mean? You know, we had the report. It was well done. It was fresh in everybody's mind. We had a lot of citizens' involvement and engagement. But as we plan to implement some of these things, I think we want to be very clear in terms of what role the county is actually going to play. And even though we are exploring some options by maybe giving you and your staff some opportunities to help gather information and bring to some information that will be final decisions that we'll make at a later date, I'm just wondering about whether or not you can, you think that we probably need to use one of those two meetings to just maybe focus on what you think might be one or two of the real critical areas that we want to be real clear in terms of what direction we want to go.
I agree. I think probably the overarching recommendation that came out of the CPAT report is the direction for Story County to develop a comprehensive plan.
Right.
And how staff approached this in the recommendation and in the memo that we provided was quite simply, we don't know what will be involved in that and whether that would be a countywide effort or just a Story County comprehensive plan. We don't know what the financial implications of that would be, whether or not staff could do that or we would need outside consultants. What the recommendation on that said was the board direct us by the end of the year to answer all those questions. I think it might be a little bit it'd be difficult for you to have the discussion on what the elements are of a vision and everything on a comprehensive plan if you didn't have those questions answered. Because you would ask me, Leanne, can you do this? And I would not be able to answer yes or no. I would not know. So that the time frame we put for that specific element was December. And maybe through your discussions in the next couple weeks, if you elevate that is our number one priority project that we need to do, the rest can take a back seat. And we can find out and move that up maybe October and have that fall in line with budget. Because there will be definite budget implications if that overarching goal of developing a comprehensive plan is followed.
You may, and I don't know if it's applicable for Story County, but I just got back from the National Association of Counties annual conference in Pittsburgh, and over the last several years, decades, the county has taken a major role in reshaping the whole economic development plan for the community of Pittsburgh. And this was a change from when the steel mills closed and so forth. And this is a a model that we might just take a look at in terms of how did they go about being able to pull all the stakeholders together for this type of comprehensive planning, because it certainly has made a difference in that particular community today. And I know you, through your planning organization, COZO and so forth, you know, there are models around that have maybe gone down this path that we could take a look at and see if we could garner some ideas. So I don't want to put a lot on your additional things on your shoulder, but if you could think of anything like that to either give us something that we could read prior to meeting just for some thought process, I'd appreciate that as well.
Okay. We can do that. The three items, the remain items that staff just even put any recommendations or beyond reading and additional thought are on page 5 of the memo. And these are really where we would like some direction, that you want us to pursue giving some recommendations to you on these three. One is a zoning audit, and what that would mean is whole scale, our regulations, every community's regulations in Story County, including Ames to Zeering. We would look to see audit their regulations and likely be led by county staff in partnership with those entities, whether or not those regulations are precluding investment in their communities. It's a very, very large project. And until we had some direction from the board that we want staff to look at doing this, we weren't going to start outlining the tasks involved in this. The next one is establishing a building code for the county. And this is something that's been on your radar for quite a number of years. Staff has proposed doing feasibility studies on this. But again, this is one of those remaining three that we were seeking some additional direction to say, yes, staff, let's keep this on our plate, or no, staff, let's focus our attention on the others. And the last is a unified marketing campaign on energy efficiency. And through the Go Green team and so many efforts from Al Hahn with Story County Facilities, Story County really has taken on a leadership role in energy efficiency in the Midwest and nationwide. But we haven't really marketed ourselves as that. We've provided outreach as communities have requested, but we haven't gone to organizations like DMAC and Iowa State said, let's compile a marketing campaign and show what everyone is doing in Story County. And that's what this gets at. And you know, all three of these are doable by staff with some outside assistance likely, but these are the three that we feel we need the most, again, I'm a broken record, direction from the board that you need to spend some time developing the tasks that will take to have success in these three items and letting us add that to your work program. As an appointee of the board, our department is definitely, our work program is guided by the Board of Supervisors. So ultimately, you will have the decision on where we spend our resources and time. So those are the three. I'm here today. Again, I plan on coming back with the recommendations, been a time frame, and asking for direction, clear direction to progress.
Well, as you well know, in order to move forward with anything, there has to be some dedicated time and effort to explore the options that are there. And over the past several years, you've been able to bring to us several suggested ideas of things that I think would be a tremendous advantage for Story County. And particularly when you talk about land use and other types of things, the role that we play in the incorporated area, outside of the unincorporated area, does change a little bit how we go about delivering service. It's not so much delivering service, but how do we engage in a cooperative venture with many of the communities. And I see that as a plus for us, but at the same time, we've got to be able to find a way to bring decision makers in those local communities to the table, or planners, to engage in that level of discussion so that we are clear that we're not taking actions that's going to be divisive or not necessarily supported by individual communities. And I know you've been very good at being able to find ways to reach out and involve them in this area. So I do think that the concept is certainly one that I could support, but I want to caution us is not to get our hopes up that you know, everybody's going to jump on board. I mean, we can lay it out there. We can talk about the quality of life for Story County, some of the things that are currently in place now that might be an impediment that we could do better by working together. And if it happens, great. But I don't want you to feel like it would be a negative or a slap in the face if for some reason that they didn't all embrace some of the directions that we're taking. But the CPAT report clearly points out through its effort that this would be a positive direction for us to take. And I think since we spent those dollars to get that report, I think it's important that we try to follow through with as many of those recommendations as feasible. That's a long statement, I know, of support. So, yes, I would be supportive of the in ideas that you've brought forth this morning. Paul, anything?
So, I'll get with you when I take a look at our calendars, and because I think it's important that all three of us would be here, and then that would give us, the three of us, some opportunity to look at these three items that you've outlined and figure out where we think our priorities need to be. So I'll get with you here today or tomorrow and pick a date.
Anything else? Great.
I did. Just a update, because it does relate.
Okay. Go ahead. The question regarding the one here, that is that one coming up a little bit later?
The local foods is coming up later.
That's
and
the
that's
one
for
coming
direction
up.
And discussion. Okay, today's was just to present the time frame and the recommendations, okay. And then later on for the direction. The board does know that we reached out to Connect Iowa, mm-hmm. to look at broadband opportunities in Story County. We have been through discussions with LaVon, with the NEDC, and Paul as well, as we've decided that the best approach is to do this on a countywide basis rather than individual communities. And working with Nicole Warren from the Iowa Association Regional Councils and Amy from Connect Iowa, we've set up the community assessment meeting. That'll be the end of August. Charlie DeSell in our office is going to be the project manager for our department. But this just fits in very nicely to some of the overall recommendations of the CPAT report and the ties between broadband and the implications of broadband and developing that network and economic development have been so successfully addressed. The successes of that tie has been very adequately documented and is very beneficial to Story County. So I'm excited that we're able to do this program. There's no cost to Story County other than our staff time. And truly, when we get to our local foods, that was a recommendation that we look at broadband. So it has, in one means, at least been addressed through the board, through strategic planning. So that, stay tuned. I think you'll be receiving an invite to the August meeting.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Okay, no public hearing items, so we move down to number 10, additional items. The first is a consideration of a request from Juvenile Court Services for a budget amendment to the amount of $12,574.85 for the remaining FY12 funds payable to Youth and Shelter Service. Juvenile Court Director Tom Southard, and Lisa, is she still around? Because I may have a question for her a little bit later. Yep, she's still. Or did
she went back to her office.
Okay, all right, good. Okay.
Thank you, Board. I'm Tom Southard. I'm Chief Juvenile Court Officer for the 2nd Judicial District, and I appreciate you making time on your agenda today. As you know, Juvenile Court Services has a contract with the county and with Youth and Shelter Services to purchase a variety of services for at-risk youth in Story County. At the end of the fiscal year, at the deadline for submitting bills, we had not submitted a bill for $12,574.85. That was encumbered money in the 2011-12 budget, and it rolled over or was unspent at the end of the year. And so we are asking the board to consider amending our 2012-13 budget to add that money so that it would allow us to pay that billing without indebting us in our current year's budget. So what we're asking the board is to amend the budget with money that was unspent in last year's budget to this year's budget, and that would allow us to make Youth and Shelter Services whole for the services they provided in the past year.
I think we had a discussion with this with Lisa here a while back, it's simply money that wasn't spent at the end of last year.
It was money that wasn't spent at the end of last year. It was a billing we received after the cutoff for billings were, and while we received the billing late, we also should have been monitoring to see if there was money that hadn't been spent, and we did not monitor that carefully enough.
Well, usually we would say, Tom, if this continues another year, do I slap your wrist or George's?
It'll come out of my salary, Wayne.
I mean, we've got to be able to point to somebody.
Oh, well,
yes,
point
this,
to him.
While this happens rarely, there are circumstances sometimes when the timing of a service is completed and the paperwork that needs to follow in order to get it on our agenda and to get it approved, that this could happen. But this certainly seems to be a very reasonable request. And you said you have had some discussion with Lisa regarding this.
Yeah, she did
this,
say that there's going to be she's got a budget amendment.
Right. Okay.
We need to make a motion on this, don't we, Shelley, first?
Yes, it would be.
I would move that we approve the request from Juvenile Court Service for the budget amendment in the amount of $12,574.85.
Okay, and I will second that request. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank
you, appreciate Tom. Your time, and hopefully I won't be before you on such an item again.
Okay.
Just make sure you communicate, Tom, communicate with Lisa, and make sure she's got all the
I'll go across the hall and let her know.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Okay, item two is discussion and consideration of amending local foods and farm growing Story County. Again, Planning and Development Director Leanne Harder.
If I can ask you to look for the paper that has the local foods and farm strategic action steps that looks like this, the boxes, I think that might be the most useful to guide the discussion. Again, staff developed a memo, put forth some recommended strategies or revisions to the approved strategies. What's guiding this is several items. One, some groups have been meeting on the side that have a vested interest in local foods. They, led by Story County Extension, reached out to Story County. We had a meeting in March or April, and they said, how can we help you see a lot of these successes come, or a lot of these projects come to success? And through that meeting, we found out a lot of the stuff that is proposed in the plan and the strategic action steps are already underway and are probably going to be better guided by those entities rather than Story County. And so we, in our office, took a long, hard look at what are the action steps that we really can affect and should be involved in and lead, which is the key, versus just be a participant in. And so with that, we drafted some proposed changes to the strategic action steps, part of the local foods plan, not amending the plan by any means, just the action steps. And that's what this the sheet I guided to you really does. And the easiest way probably just go through each one individually, or if you have questions, I can start with questions first.
No, as I said, this was the one I had read through earlier, and, you know, the rationale between moving one from action You're changing solution from to a strategy. I'm just curious as to why you're moving that from 3.1 to 1.0. What was the rationale behind that move?
What that one is, and it's solution strategy 3.1, which addresses the public leasing and public land for local food and farm production. The specific one you mentioned is this, a feasibility study to set up a beginning farmer incubator. Staff really feels that given a lot of the initiatives already underway, there are some studies to doing that. It really relates that supporting new and diversifying farmer initiatives. That's a larger strategy than just supporting the leasing of public land. And so we're saying that fits better down there. And that lower strategy, which is the new and diversifying farmer initiatives, has to be an easier way to say that. That
acronym for it, isn't there?
No, we have enough of those. That and the specific tasks under that, including this new beginning farmer incubator, we see as something that would be likely led by an entity such as Prairie Rivers RC&D, an outside entity that is looking not just at Story County but beyond Story County too, because while a lot of these are manageable by staff, the success will truly be achieved if it's outside just Story County boundaries. And as you well know, our ability to work outside Story County is pretty limited. So that's why we're recommending moving that one under that other task. Staying on Solution Strategy 3.1, we do have some suggested revisions to the time frame. And actually, they've been assigned out to staff already, and one is the tillable farmland under county ownership. I do want to let the board know why we're recommending changes to the time frame. One, the Government Restructuring Committee took way more of my time than I ever really anticipated when it was assigned to our staff. And so the time that I was needing to spend on other projects went to the other staff. And then, of course, we had an unfortunate incident earlier this late winter that really took me out of commission for a while. And so I appreciate how much everyone stepped up and kept our office afloat. And so we're on task again now. And so that's why these are being assigned. But because you did adopt these, we can't just change them by staff. It does take your action. Going to Solution Strategy 2.2, these are the programs that introduce and engage youth and citizens in on-farm experiences. In 2008, 2009, 2010, when this plan was written, we knew that there were different curriculums out there, but they weren't being marketed, and they weren't necessarily in Story County yet. Iowa State University has totally rewritten their Growing in the Garden curriculum, and it is outstanding. It's amazing. There's no need for our staff to write a curriculum. We have one staff member that is actually a professional teacher. He has a teaching degree, so it's a doable, manageable item through our department. It's just there's no need to reinvent the wheel. But what we do see us as having a key role is helping to get the information to the school districts out that this curriculum is available. We can come in with Iowa State and show you how it can affect your students, how you engage your students. But a lot of the specifics to developing the curriculum are not needed anymore. So we'd like to just change that to that one to reflect that language. Solution Strategy 1.0, again, moving that one from 3.1 down regarding the beginning farmer incubator, but really adding language in there that these will only be managed by staff under the direction or with cooperation of the Prairie Rivers RC&D or some other entity like that, and changing the staff time to ongoing, because we can create a pamphlet, but if it becomes a static pamphlet that just we create in October of 2012 will be meaningless in May of 2013. So the dates you see there on the right, we just say make it ongoing, and that just becomes part of our work program that we know quarterly we need to review whatever documents we develop. Next page, Solution Strategy 5.1. This is supporting initiatives which further the distribution and related facilities for local food, such as collaborative marketing strategies and possibilities of establishing farmers' cooperatives. We're suggesting that these be put on hold. These two tasks be put on hold until Story County finds out whether or not a Rufus WIG, which is Regional Food Systems Working Group, is going to be developed for Story, Hardin, and Boone counties. Specifically, that item is a produce auction. We'll have more success if it's regionalized versus just Story County. I was hoping that the RC&D and Extension would have found out by now, but they anticipate early August. So we're just saying today, put this on hold. and let us manage this. And with that, though, know that this is probably one of those items we're going to come back to you and say, we're just a participant in that. We won't be leading this. What I do want to inject here, though, I had an opportunity to go down last week and meet with Bill Menner, who is the head of the USDA Rural Development, and that's what I handed out, those papers. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of programs that Story County, because we are headquartered in Nevada, can apply for, but the RC&D cannot because they're headquartered in Ames. So there may, in the future, as these programs and grant and low-interest loans come to bear, we may still be playing a fiscal agent role or something akin to the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. That being said, those opportunities are just now beginning to open up. But I think the gates will open and it'll start flooding out here soon. But the key in that is getting this Rufus wig in those three counties. 2.3, establishing community garden program. The successes of the Ames Community Garden Coalition, Ames Community Garden Coalition are amazing. And what we'd like to do is, rather than again reinvent that, reach out to them, see if we can build on their successes in other communities in Story County, at least use their model. We've started mapping out where opportunities are for community gardens at Story County-owned facilities, and then we'll bring that to the board so you have some idea where those may be and what that may fiscally mean. If you create a garden, do you have to provide water, et cetera, all the items that go with that. But honestly, as staff, I'm just a hobby gardener. I don't have the ability to design a community garden. Nor does anyone on our staff and do it adequately, give it the time it deserves. So we would suggest, rather than redesigning a garden, we reach out to other entities to do that. And that's where you see the revised time frames. And on the inmate garden program, that will require a lot of research, we think, that our time will be better spent focusing on the mapping and the internal things. This is one I'd like to reach out again to the RC&D and see if they would, this would be a project that they would really own. And so, Paul, I'll probably, if you ultimately adopt or agree with these recommendations and set staff forward with these recommendations, that Paul will probably work with you and meet with Penny on. Then lastly, the 3.2, that's my favorite one because I can say three of the first three, this is undertake comprehensive review and assessment of adopted plans and regulations, are done. So I want to cherish the fact that we can say we're completed, we have completed, and these are actually in accordance with the time frame. They were completed by the end of last year, and they were part of the 35-acre study. The feasibility of establishing tax incentive programs has been signed out, and again, this is one of those we had to delay because of the activities earlier this year. I threw a lot out at you, but between the memo and the explanation, I think I just provided an overview. Do you have questions?
No, I read through it Friday afternoon and yesterday after it came out. And to me, it makes perfect sense. And once again, your department is the one that's been tasked with this, and it's apparent that you've spent some time with your staff members and taken a look to see how this would best work, and made the appropriate changes or asked that those changes be made. And to me, I think it makes perfect sense. And we've just changed some of the timelines and maybe shifted some things around, but I think the basic intent is still there. It's just probably make it easier for everybody with the recommended changes that you've made.
Let the record show, ditto. So the shortest comment ever from me.
Yeah, no kidding, right? I mean, this is a consideration item, so I'm going to make a motion that we approve the changes to the local foods and farms program as laid out in a memorandum by Leanne Harder on July 24th to the Board of Supervisors.
I will second that motion. And further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of amending the local foods and farm program as outlined by Planning and Zoning Director Leanne Harder, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Leanne. We look forward to continuing to work with you as we move forward in this area.
I'll be back, too.
Great. Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Agency reports. Next on the agenda, Youth and Shelter Service, YSS. George, as you're coming forward, and Leanne, as you were just talking about local foods and gardening and all of these things and reaching out to schools, would it be possible for us to at least engage in conversation with organizations like YSS and Boys and Girls Club that work with our youth? Because if we can get some adults to partner up and mentor and work with kids, I think in gardening and things of this nature would be a good way that we could, again, involve additional outreach and be supportive of our young people in our community as well. And perhaps that may be an area that we could also play a key role. And the other area before George and take over, the transportation aspect, depending upon where this would be located, maybe the county could work with Heartland Senior Service and the bus transportation, particularly if we were talking about transporting either students from Iowa State or youth from some of the local communities to wherever these sites would be decided. So those are a couple things that we ought to put on the agenda for our consideration, because a lot of times it's really the transportation of getting people to these actual areas will make a big difference in whether or not, you know, they can be supportive or not. So, okay. All right. Sorry, George. With that, take on. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm George Belitzos, Chief Executive Officer, YSS, to give our end-of-year quarterly report. And joining me is Jason Hoagland. He's our treatment director, and I know there's a lot more on your agenda, and we'll be as quick as we can, but we have a lot to report. First, just to take a step back, a lot of our families are really suffering right now because of the heat. We are working with a lot of low-income families, young mothers with children in our host homes. I'll just give you an example. Last night at our foundation board meeting, we identified six of our young mothers with infants and babies that all they had were fans, and the fans were just not keeping up. Went to Sam's Club. They offered to give us at cost window air conditioners, $99, and we needed six gifts of $99, and I asked and got them from people in my own foundation board. We're in emergency conditions. Won't take but a moment to say those with livestock like me, with llamas who and pygmy goats who are they're really suffering. Any outdoor animal, cattle, pets, and human beings. We were going on Ragbri with our kids, and we canceled it. It's just too dangerous. So I just want you to know that we are doing all we can with our client population to keep people safe during these emergency conditions. In front of you is our statistical report. If you look at the far right column, year-to-date, that means that's the last quarter. And so you can compare this quarter, which is the new quarter, and see how much we have done in the last 3 months. This is a quarterly report, yes, but it's really an end-of-year report. And then you can go and compare the number of clients served and the number of units that were billed or provided for Story County. And remember, every service on here, every number is a Story County resident, mostly children and youth, some parents in our family counseling program. We look down the list, and you will see most services, majority of the services, there was an increase. I will turn to Jason to give the, there have been a lot of changes and happenings with the mental health and counseling program as we've gone through a lot of change internally in Story County, as the board is well aware, and also as a state with the redesign of the mental health system.
Greetings. As George said, I'm Jason, and how are you, Wayne and Paul? You know, as you look down that report, I just want you to look at, you know, it's really quite eye-opening that we've doubled in most of those categories as we look forward, and that's prior to us taking on providing those services as the Community Mental Health Center that we started on July 1st of this year. So we're only going to see those numbers continue to explode. As you're aware, we did start the contract with Ierley Ball as of July 1, providing those safety net services for adolescents and youth. So we are now the safety net provider for both mental health services in Story County, as well as the safety net provider for addiction services for adolescents in Story County. So that means that we serve the indigent population, which is really important. We're seeing more and more kids come through our doors every day. With that, we now provide psychiatric services. We have two child and adolescent psychiatrists on staff. We just hired a new psychiatric ARNP, and we also utilize a pediatric ARNP on staff. Those are really new services for us that we're continuing to expand upon, and you're going to be hearing a lot more about that as we report on that moving forward in the next several quarters, as we start to really see where those numbers are coming from and what the new composition of families that we're serving to assist the county in making sure that these services are available locally for children and families within the county. Access is really difficult. We see transportation, as you said earlier, Wayne, as being a big barrier for appropriate care. We're working with all the local school districts to look at how we can help to serve their needs, especially for these kids who really need different types of services, especially when we're talking about medication management and appropriate therapy services. Just looking ahead at the calendar, I want you guys to remember that September is right around the corner, and that's National Recovery Month. We'll be back here in a month probably, and we'll look at the proclamation for National Recovery Month. We're setting some events right now. I'll be sending invitations out to all of you. But, you know, we really want to look forward at the calendar and really look at how we can help destigmatize both mental illness and substance abuse addiction. You know, you guys have been so supportive of that over the past years, and I just want to, again, thank you. We all appreciate how involved you have been in helping us to do that. Do you guys have any questions about the report? I'm going to keep my report brief today.
As you say, with the transition and the takeover, I'm sure that as you go through the next few quarters, you'll be able to update us a little bit more on how well things are going. As you think long term, George, do you see that through the asset process that there may be some recommended proposals or changes brought forth in terms of how some of these programs might be funded that's different than what currently is happening right now? I don't know how we, you know, exactly where we're going, but I do think that collaboration would appear to be very important, because it ties in directly to our whole mental health system, and whether we're talking youth, adolescents, or adults, that we need to be mindful that these programs, you know, does have a cost factor.
I can't predict what the asset may be doing. I know that the whole mental health field is in disarray, not just in Story County, but across the state, especially for children and youth. On the national level, with the Affordable Care Act, that's going to change things all over again. Our own state legislature has changed it, the whole payment mechanism, and I've been dealing with all of that the last few months, and it's had a major impact on Story County and your budget. I think it's very hard to predict. Do you have any predictions, Jason? I don't know. Jason, serving on a statewide kind of follow-up Mental Health Commission, and I think they don't quite know how this is going to unfold either. I mean, these are people meeting directly with the heads of DHS and others that are bound and determined to see change.
You know, I think the best thing we can do is try to promote as much stability we can locally right now until we get through November and we really figure out what's going to happen. I think there's uncertainty for all of us, and I think that that's concerning. And we're not going to know much for the next year, I think, until we can really develop changes that make sense long term.
I may or may not be able to assist you in any way as you're moving forward, but I'm part of the ISAC leadership team that meets quarterly with Chuck Palmer on many of the areas, and very little of the discussion ever talks about youth. It's mostly the adult mental health system, and if there are some things that, you know, I could pass on to keep on the radar, I'd be more than happy to do that in those quarterly meetings.
Yeah, the focus has been with the redesign on adults. Children and youth have not been addressed. Okay, moving on. There was a major focus recently on emergency shelter and child welfare emergency services because the legislature, for the second year in a row, made a major cut to emergency youth shelter. Last year, year before last, rather, was $1 million cut, almost a quarter of the budget, and then this year a $300,000 cut. The year before, four shelters closed, three of which were in central Iowa, putting a lot of pressure on our shelter to make up for the loss of the three other shelters. There's only two remaining shelters in central Iowa, us and the Polk County Youth Emergency Services. Indianola has closed, Newton has closed, and the Polk County Youth Shelter run by the county itself has closed, those three. So we are running very full. As you know, you fund beds for non-system kids. We're trying to divert as many of those youth as possible because we're so full. So if you notice in your report, we diverted 76 kids from entering the shelter and got them back home through crisis intervention and mediation with most, you know, primarily with their parents or foster parents. So we're putting a lot of effort into that. There was a major front page article in the Ames paper and a full page interview with the kids at the shelter, the staff at the shelter, the local shelter feels pressure of budget cuts. We really appreciate that kind of coverage because it really informs the community of this problem. Several things resulted from that, including a new restaurant in Ames. I think it's called Texas Roadhouse. Last Friday is one of their openings. They had all the kids from the shelter there, free meals, staff, and then all the gratuities went to the shelter. So there have been a lot of neat spin-offs as a result. We are kicking off our back-to-school drive. Our goal is to help 250 low-income kids start school with a full backpack with all the supplies that they need. So I will leave this announcement, YSS School Supply Drive, seeking donations. I'll leave this with the supervisors. Our annual scholarship program called the McKay Young Parent Achievement Awards took place a week ago Friday. The awards were presented, actually, by Robert Ray and Billy Ray, Governor Ray and Billy Ray, and I will pass this around if Jason will take that up in the we had a really good turnout. I don't think the board was able to attend, so that's why I'm handing this out. We had 9 scholarships, all funded by the McKay family through an endowment, 9 scholarships of $1,000 to 9 different mothers with young children who have either overcome poverty, moved from, FIP, which is welfare, to self-support, graduated from high school, entered college, just a long list of criteria success that they would have to have, and then they get this $1,000 scholarship. We have a committee that reviews all the applicants, and they can come from anywhere, not just YSS clients, but others as well. And though most of them were YSS clients, we are very proud of these young women. It just goes to show, with a little bit of help, how people can turn their scars into stars, how they can care for their children, how they can ensure a safe home. So we're very proud of those young women and also grateful for the donated support. I know that Jerry could not be here today, but I know the GRIP mentoring program. And oh, you are there.
Yeah,
oh,
she slipped
thank goodness. You've been there all the time.
Yeah,
all right. I will. No, I didn't see you with this crowd. This is super. I will now end my report. I was going to give your report for you and let Jerry take it from here. And that concludes my portion and Jason's. Thank you, Jerry. So now report on our prevention, youth development, kids club, and mentoring program.
Okay, thank you. So just quickly, Judge, as I look at this letter, the idea of the support for the school supplies is that you go to these local stores that have these displays and you actually purchase those and then bring them and turn them in, bring them to your agency. Is that the idea? Okay, great. Good. Thank you.
Good. Jerry Bug, Community Youth and Family Development Director, YSS. Laura and I will talk about our programs, and we'll kind of tag team it. The GRIP Mentoring Program, we served 247 young people last year, and the report is rather lengthy, 5 pages, 6 pages. Page 7 is a duplication of page 6, so it could be eliminated. But it shows you some of our outcomes. We do have a control group, those kids that were not matched. We pre and post survey them so that we have some comparison. The kids overwhelmingly felt better about themselves. A significant difference was in, they do assessments, so I feel included in activities. That was a significant difference in pre and post testing. Our results this year weren't as significant as they have been in past years. I think on page 2, where they talk about what it meant to them, is some of the most moving. Having someone that I can trust, tell my secrets to, and tell how my life is, and someone that gives me advice and understands how I feel, someone who gets me. I mean, those kinds of things are why we do mentoring and really make an impact on kids' lives. I'm going to let Laura talk about, I believe, next on your report that we gave you is Kids Club. I'll let you do that.
Hi, Laura Tetsky, the Kids Club after-school coordinator. We have our programs in Slater, Gilbert, and Story City, and this year we served 236 children in those programs. That is up 18% from the previous year, so we continue to see kids coming to the program. We had some really good information from our pre- and post-tests as well. I think we look at their social interactions, relationships, all of them either maintained or increased positive answers there. The other things we're also very proud of is the connection that it has to the classroom. We hope that it makes that transfer. We had 93% that maintained or increased positive academic performance, and 82% that maintained or increased positive behavior in the classroom. So those are the things that we really like to see, those numbers are coming from the teachers and what they see in the classroom with those kids. Of the parents that completed our survey, 100% gave that said that they were satisfied with the services. In your report, there's several quotes, a couple that I think stand out. My daughter has always looked forward to Kids Club. For her, it is more like a fun activity than daycare, so I most like the fact that Kids Club structures time so that it is engaging for kids. And I trust the staff and know that they have my children's best interests at heart. So I think it speaks to the quality staff that we have, the fact that kids aren't just hanging out with us. They really are learning and engaged, and it's making a difference in their lives. This summer, just quickly, we're learning about the rainforest all summer, and it's been really, again, a positive experience. They've had a lot of opportunities to have great experiments and learn about the different layers of the rainforest. If you walk up to any child in Kids Club, I'm sure you will hear information from them that they've learned throughout the summer. And it's had we've had the opportunity to have some really great field trips to the Botanical Center, Ryman Gardens, Threshold Learning Center in Zeering that did a whole presentation for us on rainforest. So, again, a successful summer, and look forward to that translating into, for those kids that are participating, the ability to go back to school ready to learn. They've been engaged all summer. They've been not watching TV and playing video games all summer, and hopefully they're going to jump back with a good head start into the school year. We also run the junior high teen club programs. Collins Maxwell and Ballard are our two programs, and in your report it shows 34 kids in Ballard and 21 youth in Collins Maxwell. Service learning is always a big part of what we do. Collins Maxwell did a great project with the Maxwell Park area. They did a three-step project. So they cleaned up the park one day. They had an outing, a day at the park on an early out day, and the rugby team from Iowa State, women's rugby, came and did a rugby clinic to teach kids about how to play. They did a frisbee golf clinic because they have a course there, and then they did arts and crafts activities. Partnered with the local evening activity place so that they came and told them about where they can come on Friday and Saturday nights to hang out. And then they made and placed tee signs on each of the holes at the park frisbee golf. So they were excited to be a partner, and I think the community got to see what kids can do. And then Ballard partnered with the local Ballard Creek Residence Home, and they did interviews with some of the residents there, wrote them all up, bound them into a book, and then they were displayed in different areas around the Huxley area, and each resident also got their own. So, again, a really positive program. We see a lot of great comments, both from parents, teachers, and kids about the quality and about what they're learning at Teen Club.
Next are in-school prevention programs and our community prevention programs. We saw over the last year about 2,940 students, and our outcomes were about 95% in all those programs maintained or increased their knowledge of substances and increased their harm and risk of those substances. One of the programs we do is a child abuse prevention program talking about touching, and we do it for kindergarten, first and second graders. And we increased those numbers. It's the highest I've ever seen in my 12 years of YSS. We served 1,400 kids with that program, and that's a 17% increase. And 98% of those kids maintained or increased their knowledge. And one of the interesting things about that program is we've had reports from pediatricians that that's making an impact on the kids that they see in terms of their language and their ability to tell the doctor what's appropriate and inappropriate touch, and the pediatricians have just been very impressed with that, and that's pretty exciting. So those programs continue. Our youth employment, we had two very successful camps last quarter. We do our Be the Change camp, which is geared towards kids entering 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, and it's a week-long camp at no charge to families, which really concentrates on service learning. Our first week, We serve 13 kids, and one of their projects was working in a garden, and they really had a good experience. They worked with us Kiwanians, and that was fun to work side by side with them in the garden. And then we have a graduates camp, and the graduates camp this year looked at our Teen Maze project, which we've talked about before with you, and this year in April we saw 567 Story County seventh graders, but they looked at the part of the maze that talks about financial management. It's really a lot of banks work on it. They went through the activities, felt that they were not age appropriate, created some new activities, and then invited those bankers back to have them go through their maze and what was appropriate. And that was real youth development. That was an exciting program. And I think that might finish up. And then there's lots of nice newsletters attached to that. So thank you very much. And thank you for your continued support.
And thank you. Thank you. Anything else, George? Okay, well, great. As usual, we want to again thank you and your staff for a phenomenal job that you do for our youth, not only in our community, but you reach out even beyond our borders where kids are in need, and it's very much appreciated. So, good.
Thanks, George.
Leanne, before you come on, I'm going to take a short minute and a half break. Okay, next up is a departmental report, planning and development. Leanne Harder.
Well, you've already heard about two updates, so I'll make this as short and sweet as I can. Next week on your agenda, you'll have the Oaks Ames River Infringe Amendment, as well as the Athens Ames River Infringe Amendment. Those have both been to the Planning and Zoning Commission. The Oaks, they did recommend approval. And the Athens, based on staff's recommendation, they are recommending that the board consider waiving your review of it. The Athens piece we do anticipate will be annexed. And so when Charlie presents it next week, the recommendation from both staff and the commission is that the board just set up a time frame, as you did with the Prairie North of Ames.
Prairie Moon, Rose Prairie
property. We'll probably set a year, and if it doesn't get annexed in that period, it'll come back to the board. The Planning and Zoning Commission will meet on Monday, August 6th. They have a rezoning. It's called the Carson rezoning. It's actually a downzoning from R1 residential to A1 agricultural, and it's a piece just immediately east of Huxley, city of Huxley. And the Board of Adjustment is meeting in August, but on Thursday, August 9th. Because of scheduling conflicts, they were not able to meet on Wednesday. They have a request for a sign variance from the City of Zeering, as well as the Golf Performance Center, which is being proposed by Dixon and Leanne Jensen for property along Highway 69. They did meet a couple weeks ago, the Board of Adjustment did, and approved the Cornerstone Conditional Use Permit, and this is for the Cornerstone Church along Highway 65 by Zeering. And they acted on the Wonder Appeal, which is an appeal of the director's decision on denying ag exemption, to table that until the December meeting to allow for some additional discussion between Mr. Wonder and staff and some alternative solutions for that piece. So far we have one item submitted for the conceptual review on August 15th, and that is the Dodge subdivision. And then that will be coming to you shortly thereafter, I anticipate. That will likely be our first residential parcel subdivision to come through the door. Again, we'll be back to you with our local foods. I do want to share one thing I forgot to mention when I was here before on that. The tillable land study, we'll be presenting that to Story County Conservation Board as well, and hopefully in September to get some feedback from them. Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, all the entities signed. We had the agreement received and approved by the Secretary of State, so it's an official entity. Had their first meeting, June 21st, I think. We have a second meeting this Thursday, July 26th, in Ames. Phase two applications were announced, and I'll be going to Des Moines tomorrow afternoon on a meeting on that application. I've been working on the grant application, and we're closing out everything for the first phase of the grant. We did find out staff time on the county's end can be reimbursed, so we'll be filing a claim, working with Lisa for some planning funds back for the staff, which is really good. Even at that, we still won't use the entire amount that the grant was for. Administration end of things, we are revising our brochure that we developed like 5 years ago. Kind of with our new name, we're reinventing ourselves a little bit. And so we're instead of just these are what we manage, we're going to address it from these are the services we provide. So hopefully that can be more of a marketing tool and used for the communities as well. There's a flood study kickoff this coming Friday afternoon with staff. This is City of Ames, Iowa State, and Story County doing the floods, a review of the floods and going forward with mitigation measures. A contractor has been brought on board, paid for by the City of Ames, and so that's this afternoon. Next Tuesday, this coming Friday. Next Tuesday, the 31st in the afternoon, there's a map, a physical map revision, a PMR, which is one of the mechanisms that FEMA uses to revise the FEMA maps, floodplain maps. There's a meeting specifically on College and Worley Creeks to the southwest of Ames and some area in unincorporated Story County. FEMA is remapping those areas, and so we'll see the preliminary results of the remapping efforts next Tuesday. This is an area where I'm very pleased that we can be involved in and have some more detailed maps done. We have scanned in all of our regulations now. Not only do we have all of our parcel files scanned in, we have all of our historical regulations from 1958, and so we're doing quality control on that and the parcel files, but we're also on the end of it, and we're scanning in all of our Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission minutes since 1958. So I'd say within maybe 2 months, we'll have this project wrapped up. We did pass out the revised land development regulations and floodplain management regulations. I believe you each have a copy, but those are all on online as well. And we're working on getting the county development plan map online, either through the Beacon site or through some other GIS means. Notice of violations and code enforcement cases we have. We're waiting for the submittal of a home business permit for a martial arts studio south of Story City. So we're waiting on that. And we have some pending notice of violations that we may actually be issuing citations on. We haven't, their 30 days did lapse, so we're going to reach out to them one more time. And if we don't hear from them, we'll be issuing two citations in conjunction with the sheriff's office and the clerk of court. We do have two voluntary compliance stories. The Ballard Golf and Country Club did voluntarily move their signs and come into compliance, as did a property north of Ames on a fence complaint. And then we have a lot of things underway. We're putting together fact sheets of all the zoning districts, so people, if they come in and say what's allowed in the A1 zoning, they can see it, but we'll have some pictures of what are allowed in there. Sometimes pictures speak more than just a page of all words. We're also looking at small wind innovation zones. Ryan Newstrom in our office has been working with Linn County to see if we can apply those in Story County. We're trying to define what training needs we need for the ESF 14. That's that piece of the emergency management that our department is in charge of, and getting all the documents we need to have that up and going, the EOC up and going for that. We'll be doing the mailing on the Ames Urban Fringe to contractors. We now have the list from City of Ames, and we'll be doing mass email that here's how you amend the Ames Urban Fringe. And I think I shared that form with you several months ago. Hopefully it's going to be a little bit more clear and next ones go relatively easy. We're also putting together another fact sheet, how are FEMA maps created? There's a misconception that Story County has created the FEMA, the floodplain maps. It's definitely not. especially the maps we have in place right now, were not created by Story County. They would not look like they do right now. But we want something that we can hand to people so they understand, here's how you amend the maps. Here's how they were originally developed, and just to help ease that tension. We are reviewing solar regulations. This is part of the CPAT report as well, but this is something we've wanted to do for a number of years. If you'll recall, 8 years ago we developed the wind turbine regulations, wind farm regulations. We're taking that next step and looking at solar regulations. And that will probably come to you in the next, probably October, November, after going to commission. With that, in tandem with that, we're looking at any barriers to small wind. We have the large commercial wind farms. We're looking at, see, are we providing opportunities for small wind to come forward, or are we actually disencouraging them, which is not what we want to do by any means. We have silos and smokestacks coming to you in September 25th, to give you an overview of their program and how Story County can really take part in the silos and smokestacks and any opportunities for the future. We're putting together a simple sheet of surveyors' business cards. When people come in the door and they need to divide a property or something, they ask if we can recommend any surveyors. And obviously we can't. We always say, go look in the yellow pages. There are tons of them. Instead of just doing that, we're sending an email or a correspondence to all the surveyors in Story County and those outside Story County that we know have worked here. Well, are we going to get 100%? Probably not. But we're going to say, if you'd like to send us your business card, we'll put it in alphabetical order with all the other ones we receive, copy it, and give that to people when they leave, instead of just saying, go look in the yellow pages. Because I get frustrated when I go look in the yellow pages. I'm just hoping a little bit more customer service. And then lastly, we will be coming before you probably in November as well with some draft language on a new conditional use permit for ag material storage, whether that be hay bales for the cellulosic plant, that type of use, or propane tanks, which we allow right now in the A2 district. They may be better fit through a conditional use permit that would go through the Board of Adjustment. Then, Paul, for your benefit, I'm canceling the staff meeting this Thursday, but we'll have next Thursdays. And then my next meeting, I will be giving you the statistics on the fiscal year where we were with permits. Our revenues definitely did exceed what we budgeted, which I was pleased about. But I don't have any statistics on permits yet for you. I'll get that for the next time I come forward.
This meeting on Friday, looking at the floodplain information, is that something that we need to have a representative of the board there or not?
You can. The board has appointed me to be the representative, and it's meeting with the consultant to really define the tasks and see who's responsible for what. I'll be glad to provide an update if all of you are busy and don't want to attend.
Well, I'm coming from Sioux City, Sioux Center, Iowa at that time, and I think we're down at 11:30 or 12, so I doubt if I'd be back in time for that. That's why I wanted to check to see if we needed to cover with one of us. Thank you.
I think we can do it.
Okay, great. Great.
Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you. Item 13 is liaison assignments and committee updates. Anything, Paul?
No.
And I will pass as well. Okay. Next item is item number 14. This is public forum number 2. This is comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. And I understand that there are several individuals that would like to address the board that have already submitted their request slips here. And at this time, I certainly want to give you an opportunity. You can, when your name is called, you can come up to the chair there. And all that is necessary is just to state your name again and the community in which you reside. You don't have to actually give your actual address. And we would like to try to keep your comments as brief as possible. The chair, if you go over 5 minutes, will probably be asked to call it to a halt. Hopefully it won't be that long. But anyway, we certainly want to hear your concerns. So first up at this time is, I believe, and please if I mispronounce some of your names, it's probably because as I look at your, I couldn't quite make it out. Martha, is it B-A? Can't pronounce it.
Just
Baki. Baki? Okay.
And if Trent would go up, I think maybe a lot of us wouldn't be
reiterating the same comments. Well, I've got a Trent and I've got a Robert tweet, so. Oh, I'm sorry, Roberta. So. Right, I certainly want to not step over anyone and give everyone an opportunity, but thank you.
Okay? Great. Well, thank you and good morning. Thank you to the citizens of Story County who have shown up this morning. I've got a petition here, which is just the beginning. I've got 27 names on it.
State your name again for the
Trenton
record.
Trenton Tweet.
Great.
And I am actually a resident of southern Hardin County, but my mother lives in Story County, and so I consider that also part of my domicile because of the lifelong ties to the farm that she owns. And I'm here representing her. As you probably know, there's been some discussion about a confined animal feeding operation, or CAFO, as I'll use from here forward, proposed by Eric Jensen and I believe Richland Farms. This is a 2,490 head operation, which is just under the capacity of 2,500 head, which allows him to skirt some of the permitting regulations as I understand them. It's located or proposed to be located on 160th Street, about a mile exactly east of County Highway S-14, north of Nevada, about 7 miles. My background, by education, I'm a geologist with an emphasis in hydrogeology and water resources management. I did CAFO studies when I was a graduate student at Iowa State University on behalf of the state of Iowa legislators back in 1999. So while my education is dated on this, I've tried to stay engaged as much as possible. I'm here to speak basically on a couple of questions and a couple of things that I want to ask. And I guess my first question to you guys, if I may, is what is the process for notification to the public of a proposed CAFO permitting or proposed site permit?
You're going to go ahead and yield to Paul. I think this was discussed at last week's meeting as well.
Yeah, I wasn't able to make
and
that.
So to make sure that the same information is shared, I will yield to him to comment on this.
We currently don't have any policy that we notify.
Okay. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it required that the public be served notice of any proposals of this matter?
Not to my knowledge, it's not. If I believe if they're under the 2,500.
If they're under the 2,500, it would trigger the master matrix and then a public hearing. The only other notification is through our agenda where we are asked to acknowledge the receipt. And so even there, that has been changed within the last month or so with the increased number of applications coming through that the board has chosen to open that up for opportunities from the public to comment. Normally, there has in the years past, if it fell below the threshold for the master matrix, there was no opportunity for public input. And so we have taken the opportunity to allow that to take place simply because we do understand the urgency and the concern that our citizens have expressed regarding the locations of these.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you're out of order, please. Okay, so if you'd like to speak at a later time, I will acknowledge you. But right now, this is not a give and take opportunity. Go ahead.
The other question I have is, are you guys familiar with the abandoned well program?
Our environmental health person is, I believe, Margaret James, yes.
So are you aware or is anybody aware at the county level that the proposed siting of this CAFO resides on a old farmstead that was bulldozed? I don't have the exact timeline. I was probably not living here at the time, but I would say probably over 20 years ago. And I know for a fact there used to be a farm there. It used to be a well. Yeah, because we used to go down there as kids and hunt around that property. Far as we can tell, the county has no record of this well being properly abandoned, plugged by a licensed well driller, which, if you understand geology at all, that basically a well bypasses any confinement layers and provides a direct conduit to the underlying aquifer. So you have no confinement, basically, to preclude any nitrates, phosphorus, or any other chemicals outlined, or any of the fecal coliform bacteria things outlined by the EPA, basically stating that you're directly injecting into the underlying aquifer. So that needs to take, I would say, a high priority and needs to be addressed. Also, I'd like to refer to the Iowa Code of Chapter 65 on animal feeding operations. Basically, under, I believe it's Section 65.9, it says basically a livestock odor mitigation evaluation certificate issued by Iowa State University as provided in the Iowa Code Section 266.49, that the applicant is not required to submit a certificate if any of the following apply. So it says not required. The confinement feeding operation is twice the minimum separation distance required from the nearest object or location from which a separation distance is required pursuant to the Iowa Code Section 459.202 on the date of application, not including a public thoroughfare. Well, I got on your county assessor website yesterday. I believe it's under the Beacon server. Did a little research. Part of my education was obviously using geographic information systems, and I can provide you this map. Basically, I did some research. 1,250 is the standoff distance for a dwelling. So from this confinement in any direction to a dwelling needs to be 1,250 feet. Now, twice that, obviously, would be 2,500 feet. The distance from the confinement to Mr. and Mrs. Schumacher's property, as estimated by your GIS website, is 2,156 feet, so approximately 350 feet under the threshold, which would violate that it's not twice the minimum separation distance. So that's one. So I would like that addressed to get that clarified. I'm looking through my notes, just so bear with me. Just to let you know, we've got a petition rolling, and it's just starting due to the fact that the only notification we got of this operation being licensed was from the Occupy Ames group, and I thank them, if there's any of them here today, to letting us know about this. I also want to address the Iowa DNR studies on the health concerns with confined animal feeding operations, particularly the particulate matter, which can be generated by these operations, also the hydrogen sulfide and ammonia, which I believe, if you've been paying attention in the news lately, there's been some studies. Actually, court case is going to be coming up on the fact that these places are generating over the EPA air quality index limit on ammonia and hydrogen sulfide. Since this place is not cited yet, I would ask that these studies be referenced to ensure that somebody who is going to own one is not going to be immediately brought up in court for any of these gaseous emissions, which could potentially shut down the operation. Also, I'd like to address the groundwater issues, which I did a little bit with the well. Not everybody's on rural water. It's not required. And nobody should be required to be on rural water. It's a personal choice. The fact that basically the manure management plan has been filed and that these manure applications will take place, basically, if you're familiar, you're obviously familiar with Story County, Iowa. Geologically speaking, in about 12,000 years ago, this was when the Ice Age ended and the glaciers retreated. This area was highly become a wetland. Early in 1900s, obviously, the farmers started tiling it out to farm it extensively, and they continued to tile the farmlands today. So when you're talking groundwater, in the old days you would hope that wetlands would denitrify and the phosphorus would also be taken up. When you bypass the natural processes of the soil being able to filter out, the plant life being able to take up the excess nitrate, nitrogen, you basically are running what we call pipe flow in the scientific world. You are running groundwater straight through the tiles, which bypass any nutrient uptake material, plants, riparian corridors, etc. Where do these tiles flow? Well, typically an 8-inch tile flows into maybe a 12 or a 16-inch tile, which flows into a larger tile, which eventually reaches a water course. If you've been out wandering around lately, I was out the other day, wandered around a creek. I have never in my life seen so much algae bloom in a creek or a farm pond.
I ask you to try to wrap up your comments as quickly as possible so we can allow for others to shift.
Sure, sure. I will wrap it up, and then if anybody wants to defer to me, I'd be glad to speak on those people on their behalf. So what I ask is with our heavily ag-dependent society, that a lot of these issues that we address that have made Iowa basically number 49 or 50 on the water quality index, and I'm talking in a bad way, not talking in a positive light, that you guys take this into account for this sighting and any future sightings. I think that if you were to really put this out in a public forum and ask for Story County residents' opinion, you would find that a large majority of the residents would be opposed to any kind of animal feeding operation, not just in their backyard. I'm talking altogether. I would like to ask you one question, and I wrote this down at the bottom here. What is the role or the charter of the Board of Supervisors? What is your job for the residents of Story County?
To provide quality service to the Story County at the most cost-effective way as if at all possible. But to try to administer programs that will enhance that, not only the quality of life, but to provide, opportunities for growth and development. There are a lot of different things there, but we become actually the contact or the voice for the people within the confines that are handed down from the state legislature to us. We cannot exceed the authority that is mandated by the state. Even though the state gives us what they call local control, that local control has limits. And in the area that you're talking about and what you have addressed to us, this board is very sympathetic with what you are bringing to our attention. However, all of this is out of our control. All we could do is acknowledge receipt of it. We have no authority if it does not trigger the master matrix. Even when it does trigger the master matrix, we can give a report. We can go out and go through and do our own evaluation and then submit what our findings are. And then it's up to the DNR to decide, even if we reject the application and say that Story, it's not in the best interest of Story County to move forward, we have no authority to deny that taking place. The DNR usually will work with the producers or landowners to see what mitigation efforts they can make to comply with some of the concerns that are basically there. And if you were reading carefully here in the last month or two, coming from the governor himself, they are trying to reduce the amount of restrictions or limitations that the state and local control has over agricultural operations. And obviously, production of hogs come under that measure. So whether or not we're going to get legislators to actively look at the existing laws and make some changes is going to be very problematic the way I see it at this point in time.
Okay. Well, thank you for the explanation. I just have a couple of comments to wrap it up. And ironically, they're related to some of Leanne Harder's discussion on her local foods and farms. I find that a very interesting program, Leanne. I think there's nothing better than probably educating our people on the alternative ways to have people educated in providing for themselves. I live on a small 10-acre chunk of property. I won't deny I probably will look at sometime raising a few head of hogs, maybe just for my personal use or for my friends, but they will not be in any kind of system that would negatively impact my neighbors. One of the things she talks about is the curriculum that we want to teach these young people. I guess I kind of find it ironic that that curriculum would be something that we want to educate our young people on, the well-being of the citizens of this county, as you have stated in the of the charter of the Board of Supervisors. I would be curious if CAFOs would be any part of that program, because obviously with the number of people who oppose them, I would think that that would be setting the wrong message to our youth. So I find it that you are here looking out for the well-being of the citizens, but yet when it comes to CAFOs, it seems like anybody in any kind of supervisory role likes to turn a blind eye to the citizens. And in my
I'm going to disagree with you also there.
This is the third, at least the third public hearing that we've had, and we've allowed people to.
How are we supposed to know about this? Is it written in small print in some newspaper that I do not subscribe to?
These items are on the agenda preceding these meetings every single week. There's no requirement that we notify landowners. We're having that discussion right now. I talked to the our environmental health department manager yesterday about this and thought if this is something that we needed to talk about and possibly look at notifying landowners in the event that we do get a new manure management. We've taken the manure management plans off the consent agenda, placed them on the regular agenda so people can't have the opportunity to talk about them.
Right.
But we can't simply say, no, we're not going to allow you to put that up. That is not in this board's or any board of supervisors' purview in the state of Iowa. It's all up to the DNR. And if he meets the setback requirements that the DNR give him, then the DNR, and I've spoken to the field manager several times about this, the DNR has no reason not to allow him to put that building up. We can't zone them out because agricultural buildings are not don't fall under county zoning ordinances, so we can't pass a zoning ordinance that wouldn't allow them.
Okay.
And I'm just taken a little bit aback by the fact that you don't think that we're allowing people to air their thoughts.
Well, if I may, this isn't the first time a CAFO has been proposed on this location. There was one 5 years ago. I called down here then. It was shut down because they were going to do it as a research site. So I find it ironic that you're talking about it now, that maybe you should reach out to the citizens and let them know in a more, I would say, direct method versus posting on a website, which not everybody has internet access.
Sir.
So I find it ironic that hindsight now you're thinking that maybe people want to be in tune with this. And how long have we had confinements being built in Iowa?
I'm going to take exception to your assessment. And first of all, I'm going to acknowledge the respect that you're no longer residents of Story County. Your parents are.
Right.
Okay? So out of courtesy, I'm allowing you to go ahead and speak on their behalf. But generally, I'm concerned about the residents of Story County. But this board has made a special effort to engage the public as much as possible to understand, you know, what is happening when these are brought to our attention. And then, again, understanding where the authority lies, that these are things that is going to have to be brought before the state legislature to have any impact. There have been discussions regarding local control. What does local control mean? You know, there again is a big difference between how we look at this. I have talked to our environmental health person after a couple weeks ago. They will be talking to the Board of Health regarding can we partner with the DNR for inspection of these particular sites. Currently, they don't have the person power to give the proper supervision that needs to be there? Can counties get involved with that? We may want to look at this on the local level if we can do so. However, there's going to be a cost associated with that. How that cost will be spread will yet to be determined. I can tell you one thing, this topic, I will be in a meeting on Thursday as part of the Iowa Association of Counties leadership team. This is a topic that I have brought before the supervisors. I have asked the supervisors for our consideration again to whether or not we could go back to the legislature and ask them, just like the master matrix, to allow those counties that wish to have more of a say and more of a working relationship with the DNR the option to do so. The current law does not allow that right now. I can tell you beyond a doubt that the majority of county supervisors don't want to touch this at all. You know why as well as I do. It's because if the public outcry says that they're opposed to it, and then the supervisors don't take any particular action, you know, they feel that this will come back to haunt them, so they don't want to have anything to do with it. I have been assured with the new director, and I don't know if his name is Gip or whatever, that used to be, was appointed by Branstad, will be meeting with the supervisors to discuss the CAFOs and confinement operations. So because I'm in line to serve in a leadership role in the Iowa Association of Counties, this is an area that I want to at least follow up to make sure that we are doing all we can to address, you know, the concerns that have been brought to our attention. Now, whether we're talking about just outlawing them altogether, there again is a very difficult situation for us because the individual producers have certain rights as well, according to the law. And if they meet all of the requirements that are outlined there, you know, even though you may have a public outcry saying that they would be opposed to it, you know, it's very difficult to say that they cannot be allowed to operate a production confinement area. So this discussion that you're bringing to our attention is certainly something that we very much sympathize with and understand how important it is for the citizens at large and for the protection of certain valuable resources such as well water, parks, other entities that are there. However, under the current structure right now, all that we can do now is gather all of this input, forward this to the DNR, ask them before they make final approval of any site that they consider, you know, what we have shared with them. And that's about it. And we will continue to do that. We will share as much information as we possibly can to the authorities that make the ultimate decision. We will not shirk that responsibility.
Well, this meeting with the Iowa DNR director that replaced Rich Leopold, will that be open to a public forum at all?
Do you want my honest opinion? I would say it's probably no.
So basically, is there any way we can get informed so we don't have to go dig and research this? Because we all have jobs, we all have lives. I'm taking a day off work today to be here. That we aren't spending all of our free time trying to research when and where these meetings will take place so the public can be informed and make our inputs. We don't have a lot of horsepower and legal power on our side right now to be doing all
the work. I could ask the question when we have the meetings whether it could be open to the public, and I can also give a report back if you leave me an email address or information or someone here else. I could forward that information as to what was discussed and some timetables that are outlined as we move forward.
And I certainly didn't mean any disrespect, and I understand you guys, and I'll just say this, you're kind of tied by the DNR rules. I understand that. Like I said, I did research. I did studies. I did water quality studies for the DNR as a contractor, so I'm very versed up in what rules that apply, and I understand the county may not be more restrictive in nature, which is what you alluded to, than state laws. But what I ask is you as our elected officials, representing the people here in this county, that you keep an open ear and an open mind to what we are talking about, because I will tell you, I don't think that, obviously this will not be the end of this one, but this will be something on the hot plate of topic discussion for now into the foreseeable future. It's going to have to be addressed one time or another. And so I'd encourage you to take this to the DNR and explain to them what you're hearing in your district, in your county. You're hearing this and you're hearing a lot. And this one, I don't know where we're going to go next, but we will be getting more names on the petition. We'll provide you that. Right now we've got 25 names, and that's just from this morning, 27 names. We plan on taking this countywide as much as possible, to include the city of Ames.
Just forward all of that information to me, and I will make sure that it's at least shared with the Iowa Association of County Supervisors affiliate, and we'll see where it goes. But, you know, last year I polled the supervisors, and I could tell you then they didn't want to touch this issue.
Well, I understand you don't want to touch it. It's a touchy issue, and when your county income is dominated by agriculture,
right.
I understand that, but you're going to tell me that you're going to bow to agriculture and not your community's wishes?
No, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to abide by the law.
Okay.
That's the key.
Well, we're here to help
you change the law, then. What the law basically allows.
Okay.
Thank you.
So even if a majority of your people are against it,
I've given you my statement, and that's where I stand.
Okay.
Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next, Roberta, did you want to comment at all, or... If not, we could go.
You can come to the
mic. Please, you'll need to come to the mic if you have anything to say at all, please. Okay, thank you. Kent Ryman, I believe. And please, we do appreciate you being here, folks. Don't think for a minute that we're not sympathetic to your concerns and your issues. We really are.
I'm Kent Ryman. I live over just outside of McCallsburg. I would be within 1.25 miles from where this is proposed. You know, I could talk about how it's going to stink up the whole area, how it's going to devalue my home, how hard it is for me to sell it when I want to retire or move somewhere else. All of us are concerned about the groundwater. I don't have a rural water. The smell, the flies. But what really does concern me more is how it can just pop up the next day. If Occupy Iowa hadn't sent it to me, I'd have never known. I'd seen their construction going down on the opposite corner from me, but I'd have never known it was a hog operation. Something's got to change. I mean, we have to. If it was your house, you would be upset. Wouldn't you? Or you?
I live pretty close to a cattle feeding operation, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Somebody's got to stick up for us. What state is this operation out of? Richland. Is that a local, or is that another state?
It's a local property owner.
Okay. Don't you?
And if I could just take a couple of minutes, this is all, and since I've been on the board for about a year and a half, I think we've had two operations that were big enough to trigger what they call the master matrix, and we're required to have a public hearing, and we did that. Up until now, or just recently, these new manure management plans were put on our consent agenda, and everybody's in here well aware of the outcry that came when somebody wanted to put one south of Hickory Grove Lake. And I think it's all a sign of what is to come, and that's why this board has taken the steps to see if we need to do a better job or we need to start notifying property owners that are within the area, and that's exactly what we're doing. We've taken these new application requests, and we've taken them off the consent agenda. We've put them on our regular agenda so that people can come and talk about them, and we forward the audio to these minutes to the DNR so they're aware of what people's feelings are. But I just don't want anybody to walk out here today to think that this board is doing nothing but sitting on their hands. We're trying to make the changes that we think that we can do. There's only so much of it we can do. And if we need to devise a mechanism to notify property owners that are within, and that's the second question, how far out do we notify property owners? I mean, the odor's going to carry for quite a ways. So how we need to determine how far out do we notify our property owners. And this is exactly what the process that we're going through.
You know, Michelle, I'm going to ask you this question because I don't know how, in the area of electronics today with emails and so forth, if we had citizens who asked if something like this would come up on the agenda, could we easily just send an email attachment to all of those individuals that we receive that request from so they would at least know again that this was an item that was being proposed or going to be discussed?
If anyone that has a computer that wants to be notified of an agenda it's posted on Fridays and you have to go on the web page and you basically tell the web page to notify you of an agenda. So you'll get an email, you click on the email, and that will take you to the Story County website, and then you can pick an agenda, which is the most recent agenda, and then you can see that it's going to be on the agenda. When there's an updated manure management plan, a new one, any changes that are made, it's always posted to the agenda. Anyone who doesn't have a computer, you said that you were going to talk to the Board of Health about sending out letters. Yeah.
Why not put it out to the hog confinements, make it their responsibility to notify everybody, then you wouldn't have to.
Because we can't mandate that by legally. That's
I
not.
I think you could. But
I think
we
can.
Well, like I say, we will take a. Yeah. Well, like I say, we will take that request also into consideration and ask those very questions.
Okay, another question. They're putting one building out there. Who's to say, can they put another building next to it next year, another building next to that one next year, without us being able to say anything?
I believe potentially they could.
Well, if the same property owner wants to put up another building. And if that building capacity will take him over the limit for the master matrix, and he's this guy's at 2490, which he's only within 10 animals of being over the.
But you really can't.
Not the building. Right. It's the number of animals on that site for one landowner.
Per site, not per building.
That's not to say that he might not in the future decide that, yeah, I'm going to add another building, and knowing that he's going to have to trigger the master matrix, and he'll have a series of questions that he has to answer, and then the county's health department will also review those answers to see if they agree with them, and then we're required to give to hold a public hearing.
And I almost didn't come as I was driving past the site this morning to come here. They've already got the bulldozer and excavator parked out there.
The horse is out. The horse is out of the barn.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Because the PNR has control over this.
Mike, you're going to have to go to the
mic. You're going to have to go to the mic if you want it recorded. Like, otherwise, we won't be able to pick it up. Again, we understand your concern. And go ahead.
That's all I had. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you. I hope you also recognize, folks, that right now this exchange is different than what normally would happen. normally all we will do is listen to your comment and not respond one way or the other. But rather than have you travel back and forth to different meetings and trying to give information, we're trying to take the time to give you as much feedback as we possibly can. So I hope you do appreciate the effort that is being made, even though we're not able to solve the issue that you all are really concerned with at this point in time. But one of the things that, and Leanne could attest to this, anytime we have to send out notifications via the email of the mail postal services, those are budgeted costs that have not been factored in. And if this is becoming an issue that Board of Health and the P&Z or whatever determines that we need to step up the plate a little bit more, we as a Board of Supervisors will have to approve those type of budget costs that allows for greater notifications, because right now there tends to be a defined area. I don't know if it's within a certain mile, depending upon what it is, but I believe, is it a quarter mile in? The notification that we have currently. So we would have to go back and amend some of our guidelines that talk about whether we were going to be able to send these requests out for a larger circulation. That's obviously something that can happen depending upon the nature of what the request is, but it's currently not feasible right now within the budget constraints of the departments that do send out these notifications. So that's why the emails, the board agendas, those types of things would be your best source of information, the website, etc. Okay. Barbara? Is it Kruzik? Great.
I live about a mile and a half south of this proposed site. I currently have a hog operation north of me, Crawford's, and I think they're under that matrix number. Cowser's are south of me. I don't like to run my air conditioning. You closed up all winter. I like to have my windows open. And I hang my laundry outside. I've had to rewash clothes because of this, and so I'm against having this a mile and a half north of me and the manure fields a mile west of me on the highway. My property value is going to go down. Traffic on the road isn't all that well maintained now because there's not a lot of people there. And I guess my biggest concern was not knowing anything about it. And if you guys can do something about changing how people are notified, I think that's very important.
Next, we would have John. Is it Shoal or Skull? Hole or is the S silent, John? Is the S silent?
No.
Thanks, Cheryl. Okay.
I live about a mile and a quarter where this pro site is. What my worries is, he lives down in Milford Township. He's got property down there. He could put the climate closer to his residence. How is he going to get up there if electricity goes off in the winter, ice storms, or snowstorms? How is people going to get in to maintain those hogs? That's a question. It's bothering me hard.
Okay. Okay, please state your name again for the record.
Old.
Thank you, John. Okay. Because, I say, the audio of this meeting will be able to send that along with any other requests as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Oprah Keller or Kellen? Okay, sorry. Okay. Okay, great. Please state your name again once it's there, so for the recording. No, just as you go ahead and be seated. Be seated to the microphone in front of you there. Should be on.
It's Ortha Keller, and we have property, and we live in Section 1 of Milford Township, 1 mile west of this operation. And I was here last week at the meeting, and I left thinking that I had been notified. And I guess maybe I'm hard of hearing, but we were not notified, and nobody that lives in our area was notified. And I'm going to put a little bit different spin on this than I think we've heard. We came back to Iowa in 1987, and we thought we'd find, you know, family farms, natural gardens, animal care, you know, good, all the good life. And it has really been sort of a rapid pace to science fiction farming. And I'm thinking that where we went wrong was when the government subsidies got involved. We have all these things that could never make it if they were just paid for by the ordinary people, like ethanol, cellulosic, you know, windmills, you name it. And so pretty soon you've got these wonderful byproducts of these subsidized industries that are there for the taking if somebody wants to feed it to their hogs or something. So all of these huge feeding operations have just popped up from nowhere, and there's just more and more of them. And, you know, the people are just being walked on, and, you know, nobody seems to have any say about it. The Board of Supervisors doesn't. The DNR, I talked to that guy. He doesn't really have any authority, he said. And he doesn't have the time, you know. He didn't go out to the site. He couldn't tell me he went out to the site. He wasn't sure he went out to the site. So, you know, what's going on? And here we have, there's one couple in this Iowa Select Farms outfit. They donate $2 million to Iowa State for a student center. Is this a payoff? You go through the records of some of the politicians, you know, be it local politicians, state politicians, federal politicians. They're not getting their money for their campaigns from people like me. We get a lot of mail from them wanting them to give money. But if you go to the record, you know, their big donations are coming from Iowa Select Farm and other places like that. So it's a bigger problem than we're just talking about here. I had a nightmare last night, and I'm going to tell you about it because I think maybe the story of a dream or a picture is worth a thousand words. I didn't sleep very well because I was thinking about this meeting. And I dreamed I was in the basement of one of these hog confinement places. There were lots of hoses. There were trucks, you know, sliding around in the manure trying to get stuff loaded. And I was trying to get out of there. And so you can imagine how I felt when I awakened. My heart was just pounding. And the last thing I remember seeing, I was looking around for something familiar. And there under my feet, through the manure, I could see old linoleum floor from an Iowa farmhouse. And I thought, this is where we've gone. We have gone from these pleasant Iowa farms, picture the Amish, to this nightmare of hog manure, fecal fracking, call it whatever you will, all over the place, contaminating everything. Where the children play, you know, the air they breathe, the peace of mind of the elderly, that's it. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Dan Keller.
My name is Dan Keller. We have lived in Iowa for two different sessions back in about 1968. We were living in Iowa City for 3 years. And then after a period away from Iowa, over in Nebraska, we came back because we knew this was the best farmland in the world. We're more related to Iowa than that. My grandfather was born in northeast Iowa, I believe in Buchanan County. When he got to be 20 years old, he had enough authority and apparently enough money to buy a horse. He got on his horse at age 20 and rode that horse out to California, where he had two brothers settled and living on the coast in California. Stayed there for three or four weeks. Then he got a job working in the woods and found his way up to the Seattle area. He was still single at this time. Taught school in Seattle for a couple of years while he looked around for property to homestead. And he found it. He homesteaded it. He lived on it until he died. My father inherited it. And eventually, of course, I lived on it with my parents and my siblings. There was a little problem with the neighbor. A neighbor, I won't say his name, it's irrelevant, I guess, but this neighbor had the farm, had the 160 acres immediately adjacent to the west. He didn't have very much bottom land. A lot of his 160 acres was up on the side of a hill. Well, anyhow, that guy liked to feed out pigs. In those days, there was none of this hog confinement business going on. But my grandfather had to complain to his neighbor about the hogs coming over and messing up his seedings and so forth. And eventually, my grandfather, on his own, cut cedar posts, bought hog barb wire. You wouldn't believe all the barbs on that wire, even when I got onto the farm in 1938 or so. And that fence, which ran, of course, for half a mile, kept the hogs out. There were 16 barbed wires along this distance, and of course the neighbor didn't help him build that fence or pay for it and all, but anyhow, that solved the hog problem. Another instance that my grandfather had was the state of Washington. This is all in the state of Washington, on the east side, we call it, on the east side of Lake Washington. The state decided they needed a hard surface road to go from Seattle to Spokane. My parents were in the public school business. My father was superintendent of the school, and my mother taught English and music in the high school over near Spokane. Problem that arose was the state decided they needed a hard surface road to go from Seattle to Spokane. And lo and behold, my grandfather's homestead was in the way. And so in due time, the surveyors and the road people came out. This is 1916, by the way, came out, and they posted stakes going across my grandfather's homestead, sort of in a northeast direction. And when it got a little too close to the creek, we have a really terrific creek, they took a right angle turn and went southeastward to the other side of his homestead. My grandfather went out and talked to these guys. Do you really have to make this turn all in one turn, a right angle turn, down there near the creek? That soft land, how about making a gentle turn as you enter my farmstead and go more eastward and then another gentle turn to get off of my property? Oh, no, no, we can't do that. We don't have the authority. You know, it's just the crew out there working and laying out the line for the road. So anyhow, after the crew went home that evening, my grandfather got out, pulled up all the damn stakes that they put leading up to the creek, which is, of course, through the best farmland he owned, and moved those stakes with a gentle turn onto the property, a more straight course to the other side of his property, and another gentle turn to get him off of the property. And that's where the road stayed. He put the stakes there, and that's where they built the road, and there was no more word about it. Now, that's the way they handled things back in 1916.
Yeah, well.
That road was a red brick road, and it was red brick when I was a little kid, but eventually they covered over the red brick with black tar stuff. And eventually they put a new concrete road, a little roundabout way, so that it didn't have to bother the farm at all. But that's the way things were handled then. I mean, they didn't go to any committee to decide it. My grandfather talked to the engineer that was supposed to lay out the road, didn't exactly get his permission, but when he was gone, he moved the stakes, and they didn't change the stakes. The stakes that he placed were on more solid ground, a little bit more rocky ground, and ground that never flooded. And that's where the darn road belonged, and that's where they put it.
Well, Mr. Keller,
and that's the way they settled the issue.
As you well know, sometimes common sense can trump a lot of the other decisions that are made, but quite often common sense doesn't enter into decisions that, you know, occur. I certainly think that you have lived a long time and have seen a lot of changes in your lifetime. And sometimes if we could kind of back up long enough and you apply common sense applications to the rules and regulations that we have, you know, it would see a whole different direction. But, you know, we're living in a different era and a different time, as you well know, and it makes it even more difficult and challenging for us to be able to accommodate, you know, everybody's desires and wishes. And unfortunately, you know, we don't necessarily operate the way they used to back in those days. But I certainly want to acknowledge and thank you for coming and sharing your views. And I hope that you're around several more years that you can see some of these more practical solutions to the quality of life of people in our community.
I appreciate your remarks, and all of that is right on. But I can add just a little bit more. My grandfather built his cabin near where this road entered his farmstead. That particular place was hardpan, deposited there by the glacier, hard as a rock. 40 years later, my father wanted to level it off so he could build his new brick house on that very site. But the farm has been interfered with by the city of Redmond. When I left Redmond, there were 532 people in Redmond, according to the sign up there that we always drove by every time we went to the grocery store. And now, I visited in October of 2010 on business out there. Redmond was no longer a town of 532. It was a town of over 50,000 people. And when I drove out there, I could have got lost in a minute. I didn't know which way was up, hardly.
Mr. Kevin, I don't mean to cut you off, but we do have one more here, and I certainly want to thank you for sharing your views as well. Appreciate it. This next Mike, I'm sorry I cannot, 630th Avenue, you probably have a handwriting like Paul Toot, so I can't quite figure it out. Is Mike still here? Okay. How do you pronounce that, please?
I think most of these people know me.
Judge.
Please speak into the mic. Mike, could you speak into the mic? Be seated so we can pick up your... No, we're recording this, see? So you need to speak in the mic. Please state your name again.
Mike Judge. It's a DNR here. Anybody from the DNR here? No one's here. Is there anybody from the Jensen family here?
I asked Eric yesterday, and he said that he was going to be here.
What?
I talked to Eric yesterday. He said he was going to be here, but obviously he's not.
Well, I would imagine he was forewarned. But I was going to ask him questions. I was going to ask the DNR questions. And I don't know. I'm not going to go into history like Mr. Keller did. But I remember Iowa State inventing, or not, I don't think he invented it, but containerized hogs or whatever they call it, confinement hogs, on Morrison Road and Story Street in Ames. And you could smell that a mile away. And that was in 1970 or 73. And they haven't solved this problem yet. But, and on this, when the 100 groups of supervisors gave their power of controlling the county to the DNR, or through the legislature, the legislature gave the power to the DNR. And the supervisors, like you said, were glad to get rid of that. I mean, that was just, that really stuck to their shoes when they heard about that. And the sad thing about it is, until we take it back, we're going to have this. What really upsets me is two hog lots got public opinion again, and they closed. The one over here by Hickory Grove and the right one down by Maxwell. It did affect a lot of people. And it was a wrong place for it. But this thing up here is going to cost us over $500,000, property owners around there, without a doubt. And I hope the assessor takes that into consideration. Now, we have an artesian well. I don't know if you know how an artesian well works. That's where we get our water. And my wife has had asthma since 1969. And I don't think when those bulldozers pulled in there, the horse is out of the stable. And I'm sure I've got the book here. And all the rules and regulations, and I can just bore you to death on it with my inability to read. But Eric's signed everything. He jumped through all the hoops. But the hoops were made by the these hog... I forget what they're... I got to put my glasses on. These, the people that own the hogs. Now, Eric, I don't think we'll own the hogs. This is what I wanted to find out. Eric's not going to own these hogs. Eric's not going to sell these hogs. Eric's not going to, if he does like he has in the past, he's not going to spread the manure. And we don't know how he's going to spread the manure. Is he going to knife it in? Or is it going to go out there and just scatter it like they do some places? Just twirl it as far as they can get, and then move the twirler. We don't know.
It, Mike, it has to be knifed in.
Huh?
It has to be knifed in.
I'll guarantee you one thing. Basically, I won. The overflow goes to the creek.
Well, Mike and...
All over. It's all over.
Yeah.
You cannot stop the DNR, and the DNR can't come up here and do it.
All right.
I want people find out that it's our fault. George Orwell wrote many things, but one was Animal Farm.
Yep, remember it.
And you know what I remember? And he also wrote in 1984, which is happening. But on Animal Farm, the one thing I remember, everybody's equal. But some people are more equal than others.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it for the idea of full disclosure. I serve on the Iowa Association of County Supervisors affiliate. We're meeting tomorrow. Actually, I'm leaving tomorrow, and we'll be planning the agenda for the supervisors, fall school and spring school. And we're meeting in Sioux Center, Iowa, which is just between Orange City and Sioux City. While at the National Association of Counties and talking to one of the supervisors there, you know, it's a known fact that they have more hogs in Sioux County than they do people. And yet, in every board agenda, they say they have anywhere between 8 and 15 of these confinement requests that are coming through on a regular basis. And it's unusual, and maybe because of the history, and you all are familiar, that Sioux City used to be one of the main operations for large-scale production of animals back in the day. They had the big lots out there, feed lots and so forth. A lot of that has changed now, so they're going to this type of CAFO operation. So hogs is certainly proliferated there. I don't know what is different, but I do know as county supervisors that there is a difference between where you live and how people view the proliferation of confinement in those particular areas. And this is why we were hoping that we, at least I hope, that the DNR and the state would take a look at the rules and regulations and make sure that at least if they allow for these operations to move forward, that there needs to be some mechanism for enforcement to make certain that they abide by the rules and regulations that are in place. And then if there are violations, that there are hefty fines. Currently, to my knowledge right now, I don't know if any of that exists, because they currently have a shortage of people to go out and actually inspect, as already been alluded to here. And so one of the things that I'm hoping that as our Board of Supervisors working with the environmental health, and this will be brought up to a later discussion, is what can we do at the local level regarding working with the DNR, that if these things are to be allowed to go forward, can we assist in making sure that they follow the guidelines, that there is inspections? And if we determine that there are violations, can we at the local level have authority to recommend fines? And if so, how do we go about doing that? Now, do I believe that anything is going to happen from that request? Not really. But I do think it's important that there be voices of reason brought forth to the legislators saying, hey, we've got a serious issue here and we need to look at what can we do, because I believe the most of the producers want to try to be good neighbors and good stewards of the land. But unless there is something, some way that you can hold their feet to the fire, there could be some areas that go above and beyond. But I don't know where this is going to go, but I do want you folks to know that this board will continue to be voice of receiving information from citizens and sharing that to the decision makers. And hopefully when those decisions are made within the guidelines that we have to operate on, we will try to certainly provide a mechanism for you to have your voices heard, because you can't all go to Des Moines. You can't all go to the legislator and get on the agenda and voice your concerns during the legislative session. You can contact your local legislators here. We can provide the names of all of those individuals for you. But they are, in many cases, are also outnumbered in terms of the interest from the other decision makers that ultimately are going to rule on agricultural production in our state. So beyond a doubt, I want you to know that I do appreciate the time that you've spent. I hope you don't think it's a waste of your time. We will continue to voice your concerns and try to do what we can at the local level to the best of our ability. So is there anyone else that that we didn't give an opportunity to speak that wanted to speak? I have all the ones up here, so forth. Yes. Sure, you can go ahead and put it on the microphone just so that I may not can answer it, but I
can. It's a tweet.
Okay.
Do we have a legal leg to stand on with this open well?
I think that's a question we're going to we'll have to check with our county
I went
attorney.
Down there yesterday. They told me in no uncertain terms that if they couldn't find anything on record for that site in there, and it goes back way back. And she said since there's nothing there, the assumption is that it was not taken care of. So, and she told me, if I see that bulldozer move, get on the phone.
And then what?
Well, I assume, didn't ask her, but I assume I'm going to go back down and talk to her, that they will stop it because it's illegal. The well, it was not closed legally.
Well, there again, as an individual, there is a channel that you can go through to try to get an injunction from the courts, but that's going to be a cost that is borne by the individual citizens to do that. But there again, not knowing whether or not there's a legal record of existing well and whether it's been maintained or what have you, and whether under these guidelines, as was mentioned earlier, that in itself would disqualify this operation, I would think that if there was some facts that the DNR could consider, they would take that in consideration before giving the final approval to go ahead. But I don't know if that is even become an issue or not.
How long has it been since there's been any buildings or house on that?
Well, we moved down there in 75. And when our boys were small, we used to warn them the house was falling down. And there was still trees there, and I think there might have been a couple small outbuildings. And Mike said that there are two wells there, and I don't know about that, but we know of one, because I used to tell the boys, they went down there with their BB guns, and I said, don't walk on those boards, that well was rotten. So, and I can't tell you how long it was there after we moved down, where I live now. I'm going to say at least 5 years.
Yeah. Well, I do know that our environmental specialist, Margaret James, is concerned about the septics and well systems. And that will be, again, something that I think the Board of Health will begin to address as we look more into this. And because I think this really came to light when we started talking about the one KFO operation that wanted to be near within a mile of the Hickory Grove Lake. And then the questions came up at that point as well, what about other water sources, groundwater sources, such as septics and wells and so forth. And so I think that we need to take a look at all of those factors, because it does and could negatively impact the watershed and the runoffs that will ultimately go into our streams and of this nature. So
I assume that that's what they have in mind when they said if anything, starts down there to let them know, because they don't want them beginning something and then running into problems.
But who wants to let who know? The owner or?
When I went down yesterday to the health.
Oh, the health. Okay. 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 Great.
If the bulldozer moves.
I don't know. Okay.
So I assume that they don't want them to start without looking into this further, is what I'm hoping.
Well, they would have to, if you don't mind. It states right here that the distance to Wells is 400 feet.
Right.
So. And the house, that acreage, or whatever you want to call it.
I believe the comment was, the question was, the distance to Wells, the guidelines say 400 feet, and if this is less than that area, then we've got some potential issues. So,
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Okay. We'll pass that on to Margaret and see what we can find out.
Another thing that bothered me is when I've been looking on things on the computer, just on different websites, and there's a website that comes out of Decorah, and he states that there are 25 deaths in Iowa that have been positively attributed to the poisonous gases.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's not ever been a fine levied against anybody. And, you know, it's a concern for us. We have people in our neighborhood who have health issues that have, you know, especially respiratory is a big concern. And I'm like her. I have my windows open. I've got laundry on the line at home right now. You know, we eat out on the deck. My family comes home on the weekend to visit me, and they expect to be back in the country. And it's not going to be that way.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. All right. Then as we move on to the item 15, announcements from the supervisors. And as I indicated, I'll be heading off to Sioux City and Thursday and Friday meetings, and this topic will certainly be a topic of discussion. With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move adjournment.
And I will second it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.